Hi everyone, this is Katie Couric, and I want to welcome you to one of my favorite programs, Nostalgia Radio Time, hosted by my friend Greg Van Beek.
Go, Joe, go!
A mix of some of the finest music from legendary performers and personalities of the greatest generation, along with complete vintage broadcasts from the golden age of radio, mix it together, and that's Nostalgia Radio Time.
Hello out there in Radioland. From the campus of College of DuPage in Glen Ellyn, Illinois, we present Those Were the Days. And now, stepping out of his cabana with a trunk full of fond memories and celebrating old-time radio since 1970, here's your host, Radio Hall of Famer Chuck Shaden.
Wow. Oh, well, thank you very much, and thank you, Ken Alexander. Welcome to program number 1914 in our series designed to bridge the sound gap between yesterday and today. Today is Saturday, July 14, 2007, and today it's a swimsuit edition of Those Were the Days. Taking a cue from the summer issue of Nostalgia Digest magazine, we've moved our entire show from our regular WDCB studios to another part of the College of DuPage campus, where our Those Were the Days gang is joining us with the staff and faculty members and their families for a poolside broadcast this afternoon. We're going to be here until 5 o'clock with 4 hours of fun in the sun as we share with you some appropriate programs for this unusual outing.
An unusual outing for Chuck and an unusual opening for Nostalgia Radio Time. But any fan of old-time radio is no doubt going to recognize that program, that voice, and that name, Chuck Shaden. Chuck was a producer and host of the long-running Those Were the Days program from 1970 to 2009. He has been nationally recognized for his efforts and was inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame in 1993, the only radio fan to be so honored. A former newspaper editor and marketing executive, he turned his hobby into a vocation and drew from a collection of more than 50,000 vintage programs to prepare his broadcasts. During his 39 years on the air, he interviewed more than 200 performers, writers, producers, directors, and sound effects people, all associated with the radio days. He was the founding editor and publisher of Nostalgia Digest magazine for 31 years, a publication that's still being produced today. A published author of several well-received books, he has a brand new book titled Chuck Shaden's Radio Days, Adding Decades to the Golden Age of Radio, that has just been released, and he is with us today to talk about his remarkable career. So it gives me great pleasure to welcome a true broadcasting legend in Nostalgia Radio Time. Chuck, it's an honor to have you with us today.
Well, thanks very much, Greg. I'm exhausted from that workout you just gave me, I'll tell you.
That's quite a build-up, right?
As I mentioned previously, you've authored at least 3 books, all dealing with radio and broadcasting, but this latest book is perhaps a bit more special for you because it is, in fact, your autobiography.
Well, it's kind of an autobiography. It's more of a memoir of my days in radio. There's some little biographical things in there that add to the material I've got in the book. But it's really the experiences that I've had and the pleasures and the joys of producing and hosting a radio show for so many years, and to have had the opportunity to meet so many wonderful radio people and work with so many people who have an interest in the old-time radio shows, like you, for example.
Oh, I should say I am. Growing up in the 1930s and 40s, radio was your constant companion. As you said in your book, your parents lived in a 4-room flat with 2 radios.
That's right.
And you also mentioned that you recall listening to The Shadow, one of your favorite programs, on December 7th, 1941, when it was interrupted with the news of the bombing of Pearl Harbor.
That's right, and I could have cared less at that young age about Pearl Harbor. I wanted to find out whose minds that shadow was clouding at that point. But nonetheless, I grew up really from that point on with radio that I can remember, and of course, those war years were influential on me as well, because even as a kid in grammar school, we participated in the war effort. And so later, and many years passed, then later on we got involved in tracing the 4 years of World War II with radio programs on my broadcast.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The shadow knows.
Having spent literally your entire life enriched by the great programs and personalities heard on radio in those days before television, what are some of your all-time favorite programs that you listen to live and continue to enjoy to this day?
Well, my favorites are, I think, many of the people I've spoken with over the years, I mean listeners, for example, they join with me in having the same favorites, Jack Benny, Fibber McGee and Molly, Suspense, the Lux Radio Theater, Lights Out, Inner Sanctum, and so many of the sitcoms, although they weren't called sitcoms in the radio days. They were just family comedies like Blondie and The Life of Riley and The Great Gildersleeve and other programs of that nature. Sure. And they're all top favorites for me. If I had to choose one series that I would relish more than any of the others, in spite of the fact that I think I could listen to Jack Benny three times a day, every day for the rest of my life, I would probably choose the Lux Radio Theater for many reasons. Lux was an hour-long broadcast. It covered all the various styles of programming from the radio days, although they were really reenacting, or not so much reenacting, but they were really dramatizing movies. But there were dramas and comedies and adventures and westerns and musical programs and all kinds of types of broadcasts with all the stars. Sometimes we heard on radio the stars of the movies they were honoring that week, and sometimes they had alternate casting when either the original stars weren't available or they just decided to do some different type of castings. And so the Lux Radio Theater really has everything. And those people that I talked about, Jack Benny and Fibber McGee and Molly, they were both on Lux Radio Theater from time to time. And so you get to hear everybody. I love those radio shows and still do, still enjoy listening to them, and still enjoy having them in the center of my life, so to speak.
Lux presents Hollywood. The Lux Radio Theater brings you Betty Davis and Spencer Tracy in Dark Victory. Ladies and gentlemen, your producer, Mr. Cecil B. DeMille. Greetings from Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. Each year, the actors, directors, producers, and other members of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences vote on the outstanding accomplishments of the year in Hollywood. The last Academy Award for the best performances by an actor and an actress went to Spencer Tracy and Betty Davis. Both these stars are with us tonight. And even the unemotional lights in front of the Lux Radio Theater have a special glow of pride in our players and our play, Dark Victory. Our stage is set for a prize-winning achievement. And so is the stage in your home when Lux Flakes is starred. Many domestic producers have discovered that casting Lux Flakes in a leading role is good business at the household box office. If there's a little more gray in my hair this week, believe me, it came from the task of finding the right dramatic material for two such splendid artists as Betty Davis and Spencer Tracy. In fact, we considered and rejected dozens of plays before selecting the one we think is perfect, Dark Victory.
Let's talk about a few of those programs that you mentioned, starting with Jack Benny, who always had one of the top-rated programs consistently. His time slot was always on Sunday evening, and for countless families, he helped everyone wind down the weekend and get ready for the week ahead with an ensemble cast that became like an extension of their own family.
Right, correct.
And you enjoyed listening to the Jack Benny program growing up, never dreaming that one day you'd not only meet the man, but have the pleasure of a one-on-one interview with him for your radio program.
Yes, that was an amazing thing. I had only been on the air for a couple of months back in 1970, and Jack Benny appeared at a local theater in the Chicago area. And I contacted the theater and said, I'm on the radio with these programs, and I'd like to be able to set up an interview with Jack Benny. And even in the short period of time that I was on the air, these people knew me and knew what I was doing, and they said, come on out. And on the afternoon of his opening night, I met him backstage, and we sat down for a nice conversation. And everything I had ever read about Jack Benny was that he wasn't too nostalgic. He was always thinking of the future, and he was always promoting, if he was promoting anything, he would be talking about his television shows at that time. But my mission was to talk to him about some of those things, but mostly about his radio days. And he willingly talked about his radio days and said he enjoyed them, and we had a nice conversation. And I was, since it was so early in my game of being on the radio, I was a little nervous about the whole thing. But he made me feel very much at home, and he was there to talk to me, no one else. He was there to chat about his career and, of course, about the fact that he was opening that night at the Mill Run Theater in suburban Niles, Illinois.
The Lucky Strike program starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Rochester, Dennis Day, the Sportsman Quartet, and yours truly, Don Wilson. Ladies and gentlemen, 1949 is gone and forgotten. But to Jack Benny, 1950 will always be remembered. Because 1950 is what he paid for his new suit. And here he is, Jack Benny.
Thank you, thank you. Hello again, this is Jack Benny talking. And Don, I want to ask you something. How did you know that I bought a new suit?
I heard it on Greer Pruser.
You heard it on what? Wait a minute, I want to hear this. You heard it? You heard it on what?
I heard it on Drew Pearson's broadcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, he got the award for being the best announcer in the show. That gives you a rough idea. Dr. Gallup must have given it to you. Now, wait a minute, Don. Drew Grierson, or Drew Pearson, is a commentator who specializes in national affairs. Why would he mention that I bought a suit for $19.50?
Because Wall Street feels that it indicates a definite trend toward a bull market.
Yeah, I can't understand it. A man goes out and buys a plain herringbone suit and it shakes the economic system of the nation. I need wool socks, too, but who knows what it'll do to England.
Conversation and the impact of the fact that I was sitting across from one of my heroes on the radio is so soon after being on the radio. It was amazing to me, and I've been proud of it ever since.
Do you remember what your first words were?
On radio?
On the Ed Sullivan Show?
Was it Ed Sullivan or my own show? First show where I said something like, because it's been repeated so much, something like, this is Jack Benny, there'll be a slight pause while you say who
cares. For everyone to say who cares?
Who cares, or who know, or who cares, or something, I don't know. It was something like that, yeah.
Well, you were on the Ed Sullivan Show back in 32.
Right.
And then that was in March, and then later that year, in May, you started your own program.
In May, I started my own program. And I got it through the Ed Sullivan Show.
The sponsor?
The Canada Dry Ginger Ale. They heard me on the Ed Sullivan Show, and as soon as that show was over, they called me and made me an offer.
And you've had a sponsor on radio and TV ever since?
Ever since.
Right. What did you do on that Ed Sullivan Show?
What happened was, I was in New York, and Ed said, Jack, why don't you come on my show? He did a sports show or something. Mm-hmm. I said, what'll we do? He said, what'll we do? He said, oh, let you and I sit down. We'll write something. So I forget what it was, a couple of questions. He was doing a sports thing. So we sat down, and there wasn't much to the show except little talk, but evidently the agency for Canada Dry Ginger Ale perhaps liked my speaking voice, because that's all they could go by.
Right.
And they made me the offer right away.
And that was for...
Canada Dry Ginger Ale.
No, I mean for what length of time? Was it a 13-week series at that point? Or?
That was 39 weeks, I think, with Canada Dry Ginger Ale. I think it was. Or I don't know how many weeks it was. But what they didn't want... See, I insisted on doing comedy commercials. Hmm. Otherwise, I didn't want to do radio, television, nothing. So, they were afraid of the comedy commercials. We had some very funny ones. And finally, they wanted me eventually to do, even though they had a lot of marvelous letters telling them how good the commercials were, because they'd never heard commercials funny like that, they still didn't like the idea. So then they wanted me to do straight commercials, and I said, I don't want it. And they even wanted me to do it, you know. It was something like that. And so then I could see we were going to have a little problem. So I said to my manager, let's look for something else, because I don't think they're going to keep me if I stop doing comedy commercials.
Insisted on the comedy commercial right from the beginning.
Right, and from the very first show.
When you had the sportsman on the, was it the Lucky Strike program where they came in?
That was Jell-O, Lucky Strike, right, everything,
right.
Yeah.
Well, you wrote most of those, didn't you? Or have
with
a big
my
part
writers,
of it?
With my writers, yeah, sure. We wrote every one of them. And when we started for Jell-O, the Lucky Strike, the Jell-O commercials saved Jell-O, because Jell-O was going out of business almost on account of Knox Gelatin was beating Jell-O, beating the hell out of them. And so they wanted the comedy commercials, figuring that that could be the one thing that would save it. And by golly, it did.
It did it. How long were you on for Jell-O?
Oh, for a long time. General Flew, Jell-O. And then when they had enough of that, we went on. We stayed with them for Grape Nuts Flakes and Grape Nuts and all this and that. And then I don't know what happened with that. We were on for years and years and years. And then I went with Lucky Strike. I think Lucky Strike made me a bigger, better deal, whatever it was. So I went with Lucky Strike.
And I'm sure even to this day, when you see a Jack Benny program on TV or one of his movies or listen to one of his radio shows, you think back at how very fortunate you were to be able to have a one-on-one conversation with such a legendary figure.
And even at that time, I never dreamed that I would eventually, over the years, talk to most of the members of his radio cast and a couple of his writers, as well as his daughter and other people connected with the program. And that's what I was able to do. And a number of years ago, I put together what I call an autobiography called Speaking of Radio, the Jack Benny Program. And it's like six CDs, over 6 hours of conversation with all those performers, Phil Harris, Dennis Day, Mel Blanc, Frank Nelson, so many of those people that were on the program. And then the writers, Joseph Berg and George Balzer, we talked about the Benny program, and interspersed between excerpts from those conversations that I recorded, we tossed in appropriate clips from the Benny show. So that's a nice set, and I'm very proud of it. And it really is an in-depth look at the life and times and all the wonderful comedy generated by the Jack Benny program.
In essence, you created an audio archive of the history of radio, or the history of the Jack Benny program, and that's something to be very proud of.
Well, they were all very eager to talk about their careers and about Jack Benny, and I have never met anyone or even heard of anyone who didn't have a great deal of respect for Jack Benny and who had anything but good things to say about him. He was not, of course, in real life, the character that he played, that he portrayed himself to be on radio. He was almost, in many cases, the opposite. He was very vain on his program, but he was not vain in real life. He was stingy in his program, and on the contrary, he was very generous in his real life, and so forth and so on like that. I don't think he ever really owned a Maxwell, but he did donate it to the war effort during World War II on one of his programs. And miraculously, the car came back after the war. I don't know how that... Maybe they didn't even want it for the scrap drive.
Probably not.
Well, you mentioned Fibber McGee and Molly, another long-running, hugely popular series that is still fun to listen to today. And much like with Jack Benny, you got to interview Jim Jordan, who played Fibber, but your time with him didn't end there. Tell us about your experiences with Fibber.
Well, I had a chance to meet and interview Jim Jordan in his home in Beverly Hills, California, in, I think it was 1973. And what a joy it was. He was happy to welcome into his home a radio person who was from Chicago, his former home. And so we sat and talked for a long time about his career, and we got wonderful stories, and we had a nice rapport together. And I enjoyed meeting him, and I think he enjoyed the conversation. And subsequent to that, I was approached by an advertising agency in the Chicago area to come up, if I could, with an idea for a radio program that would honor the 40th anniversary of their product. The product was the Chrysler Air Temp air conditioning units, whole house units and air conditioning units. And they were celebrating in 1974 the 40th anniversary of their product. And I guess they didn't want to do anything like a big TV special or something. They thought they would want to do something with radio to kind of carry them back to the 40 years. And I had suggested something like Fibber McGee and the good old days of radio. And I would go to Fibber McGee's house at 79 Wistful Vista and talk with him as he tuned into a very magical radio set that he had, a good old-fashioned Super Heterodyne radio, and it was able to tune into various programs from various nights of the week. Well, I had a lot of nerve suggesting this because I had not talked to Jim Jordan about doing anything like this, but I knew that he was ready to do something again. Anyhow, the agency liked the idea. I got in touch with Jim again, and we talked about it. We talked with Phil Leslie, who was one of the early writers for the Fibber McGee and Molly program, and asked him to participate with us, and we ended up doing 7 one-hour programs, one for each night of the week with me at Fibber's home in Wistful Vista, talking about the programs. And it played nationally over some 50 markets in the USA. And I guess they sold a lot of whole house and air conditioning units because of it. And once again, here I am in a spot that I never dreamed I'd be, sitting across the microphone from Jim Jordan, playing, in effect, a young radio fan who had a lot of good Molly-type lines, because Molly was long gone, I'm afraid to say. But Jim sat down before that microphone like he'd never been away from a microphone, and he talked about, on the air, the scripted stuff that we had prepared for him. I've created most of the history of radio that we discussed, and Phil Leslie put it, well, we called it fibberizing. He fibberized our script and brought in all the great comedy things. And then we brought in Gail Gordon to do a little cameo as Mayor LaTrivia, and Harold Perry to do another cameo on another night as Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve. And it was a wonderful, wonderful event.
Boy, if the old-timer Horatio K. Boomer and Wally Wimple could see me now. Fibber McGee, back on the radio right here from 79 Wistful Vista with a brand-new program where I'm going to bring back the great old radio shows from way back. Shows like Mr. Keene, Lum and Abner. Well, I guess I ought to get this place straightened up a bit, though. Where's that vacuum? Oh, I left it in the hall closet. Oh, look!
Gangbusters, Duffy's Tavern, Mr. District Attorney are just some of the highlights of Fibber McGee's special program, The Good Old Days of Radio, tonight at 9:05 right here on WOR.
We've taken a walk down Radio's Main Street past 79 Wistful Vista and into the Beverly Hills home of Jim Jordan. Fibber McGee. Jim Jordan, I can't believe I'm really in the McGee living room today.
Mm. Well, you are, and welcome.
Thank you, Rick.
I'm glad you're here, and especially since you came from Chicago, and especially since you came from Evanston, too.
Well, thank you. I'd go a lot further from Evanston to Beverly Hills to say hello to you. There's so many things I'd like to ask you about, I hardly know where to begin, but, well, where did things begin? You came from Peoria, didn't you?
That is right.
And is that where you met Marion Driscoll?
That's right. We met in Peoria, and we were married there in 1918. I started in the business in 1917 in vaudeville, mm-hmm. and, of course, I went to Chicago to start, and then in 1918... I came home, and I had to wait for the draft then in April of 1918. And we were married in August, and because the draft board, the head of the draft board lived next door, and he told us at the end of August that the war was winding down and I wouldn't be called. So we got married, and we got married on August 31st, and we went to St. Louis to spend a little honeymoon with a sister who lived there.
Mm-hmm.
And we were there about 5 days when I got the summons. Uncle Sam needed me then, and so I went right in the service.
And what did you do? Were you over in...
I went to France. I was in France inside of about 6 weeks. And the war did end then in November the 11th. And I had been in a hospital with dysentery, and we started a show there, and I worked in the show for about 5 months, an army show,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and then we came home in July.
Well, it was a 7 week series, and it was great. It was great to have, and I'm so proud of it. And Jim enjoyed doing it too. And consequently, because of that, he and I became even closer. And whenever we got out to California to do some interviews, I'd give him a call and I'd say, "I'm in town. What you got? Any time for lunch or dinner?" And invariably, he would say, "Well, you know, as you get older in years," he didn't say this, but "as you get older in years, you have certain things to do on certain days, and you're not going to do anything else that day." And he would say to me, "Well, I got a haircut today, so maybe we can do this tomorrow." Sounded just like Fibber. But we always got together to meet with him, my wife and I, and Jim and his wife, Gretchen. Sometimes we'd meet for dinner at their home. And often we'd go out to a favorite restaurant of his where he would regale us with great stories of the radio days. What a wonderful treat it was for me. And then to share with my listeners, too. Yeah, it was very nice, very nice.
We're talking with Chuck Shaden this week on Nostalgia Radio Time, and he's the author of a brand new book titled Chuck Shaden's Radio Days, Adding Decades to the Golden Age of Radio. Let's tell the folks how they can get a copy of this highly recommended book.
Well, it's not available in bookstores, and it's not available on Amazon or things of that nature, but it is available through my own website, which is www.speakingofradio.com. Speakingofradio.com. And when you go to that site, right on the very home page, there's all kinds of information about my book. It tells how you can order either online or by mail. Or if you happen to live in the Chicago area, there is one place, one retail store, that carries the book. And it's there, and you can order it. And there's also a link there where you can look at some of the pictures that I have in the book. There are over 200 pictures in the book. And then there's a list of the contents in the book, too, so you have the whole look at the whole business. It's a 270-page book with, I think I said, 200 photographs, and it's a joy for me, and we've got a fun cover on the book. It's a soft cover book, 6 by 9 inches. What else can I do to tell you about the book? Speakingofradio.com.
And if you go to speakingofradio.com, it's just an incredible archive of Chuck's programs, old-time radio shows, and all the interviews he's done. How many of your Those Were the Days broadcasts are available on demand on the website?
Probably some 400 or so of all of the shows that we've done over the years. We continue to add. See, my Those Were the Days programs were mostly four-hour shows. And they were for all the 39 years, and since then, too, the program continues with another host and producer. But since then, and this is the 50th year for Those Were the Days.
Yeah.
But the program has always been in the same time slot, Saturday afternoons in Chicago at 1 o'clock. And we've only been on three different stations over all the 50 years that we've been, that the program has been on the air. But we are continuing on my website. We continue to put some two programs on the in the archive every week. Two of the vintage programs go in the archive every week. So it's a long haul to put 39 years of programming from, that's from my period of time on there, on the website. But it's going, and we've done it, and it's a good, a pretty good archive. And you, it contains, the programs contain all the interviews that we played, all the programs that we played, all the special guests that we've had, all the special events we've done. They're all in there. But in addition to that, there is a total archive of all the radio people that we have interviewed over the years. The performers, the stars, the supporting players, the writers, the producers, the directors, the sound effects people, all the complete interviews are on, unedited, just uncut. And then in almost every single case, after we you listen to the interview, there is a link to listen to a broadcast, either that was starring the person that I talked with, or they were a performer on the program, or it was written by the person, some connection with the person who was being interviewed. It's a I'm very proud of the archive, and it's there, and people can just listen there, and it's never a charge. Never a charge to browse through the website, never a charge to hear those interviews. I'm proud of it. I'm proud of the work I've done on there. Never thought when I was a kid on the floor in the living room, listening to The Shadow and so many other programs on my Zenith console radio, you know, of course, the one with the lightning Z on the front of the dial. You're very familiar with all those vintage radios. But never did I think, Greg, that I would, that I was one day be meeting some of those people and talking with them and having them say to me, and I'm real proud of this too, immodestly I say, many of them have said to me, my goodness, you know more about this stuff than I do. Well, I did a little bit of research to before I got into the conversation with them. But they were mostly pleased because I never put a time limit on the conversations. Sometimes people would expect you're going to do one of these 1 or 2 minute quickies, and that would be it. But when we put the tape on the machine, we started the player and recording, and then we just talked, and it was uninterrupted. And in most of the cases, I would say to them, when I play this on the air, we're going to play it uninterrupted, and that's the way we did it, at least initially. Initially, we would play it uninterrupted. Sometimes if I had a 40-minute interview, we'd play it uninterrupted. Really? And that brings the listener right next to me in the living room of somebody's home.
Well, I'm sure, too, in many instances, these people were happy to talk with you because you had a genuine interest in their careers and you had done your homework. You knew something about them. You knew what you were going to talk about. Whereas some newspaper journalist might just show up for an assignment and ask some broad, general questions. These people have been asked hundreds and hundreds of times before, but you were able to engage them and get them to look back at their careers and remember things that I'm sure they had forgotten.
Well, I had a mission, Greg, and my mission was to talk to them about their radio days. I could not, in every case, confine it totally to that. For example, I met Tony Randall when he was in Chicago to promote the Odd Couple television show.
Ah.
Well, naturally, you have to talk to him about the Odd Couple television show.
Sure.
But I said, I would like to talk for a little bit about your radio days. And he said, well, I never was that crazy about doing radio. And I guess he said he was felt that the writing wasn't that good for the most part, and he had stereotypical type characters to play. But he remembered everything about his radio days. He could remember the openings of programs, Mr. District Attorney that he was on, any things like that. And then he did say that he really loved working with Carlton E. Morse on one man's, not so much one man's family, but on I Love a Mystery. And so, you know, you're talking to him, you can't ignore the new TV series, and certainly it was a great success for him, The Odd Couple. But we got a real nice interview talking about his radio days.
Well, now you mentioned also about the nighttime programs that you did. Now, mm-hmm. which nighttime shows were you? You see, I've checked a lot of reference books on radio, and I can only attach you to I Love a Mystery.
Well, that was a contract job, and I was on it for years. Uh-huh. But the other things you just came in and did once. You're just an actor. I was on Mr. District Attorney many, many, many times. But if you'd look up Mr. District Attorney, you'd only find up. You'd find Len Doyle as Harrington.
Jay Jostin.
Jay Jostin as Mr. District Attorney, and Vicki Vola as Miss Miller.
Right.
Yes. I did a pretty good imitation of Jay Jostin. The announcer was Fred Utow. Yeah.
Let's hear your Jay Jostin imitation.
Well, I should tell your audience that it's very early in the morning here at the Ambassador East, and I'm not in voice yet. Once Shalyapin was asked to sing in the morning, as you know. He said, sing in the morning. You can't even spit. But I remember the announcer saying, Mr. District Attorney, champion of the people, defender of truth, guardian of our fundamental rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And the music would come in, Peter Van Steeden's orchestra. Mm-hmm. And then on an echo chamber, Jay Jostin would say, and it shall be my duty to defend... No. And it shall be my duty to prosecute to the limit of the law all persons accused of crimes perpetrated in my district. And to defend with equal vigor the rights and privileges of all its citizens.
Terrific, terrific. Can you remember the sponsor of that program?
Sure. Ipana for the smile of health and Sal Hepatica for the smile of beauty.
Great.
Vice versa,
right. Yeah. They used to come in.
Yes, yes. And if you were on the show often enough, you'd get cases of this stuff sent to your home.
No salad.
And that was produced by a wonderful man named Ed Byron. He was really a good radio director.
Speaking with Chuck Shaden, the author of a new book, Chuck Shaden's Radio Days, Adding Decades to the Golden Age of Radio. Next year, Chuck, the program you started on May 2nd, 1970, to be exact, will be celebrating its demi-centennial, 50 consecutive years on the air. That's an amazing accomplishment I'm sure you're extremely proud of.
Yes, indeed. And I've been invited to come back on the show a little bit as a guest now to talk about some of the things that we've done over the years. And there's going to be a gala anniversary celebration, a live broadcast from a large venue, actually on the precise 50th anniversary date, which would be the 2nd of May in 2020. So there's a lot of things coming up and looking forward to in this year ahead. And that's another thing. You know, when I first started with this broadcast back in 1970, I was assured of a one-year commitment. And I thought, wow, if I can do this for a year, how wonderful it could be. And never did I think that it would go on. Never dreamed that this program would still be on. And it's now in its 50th year. I'm happy with that. And I've been a lucky man to have been able to do something that I loved so much for people who enjoyed what I was doing. Oh, that's a great combination.
Don't touch that dial. Listen to...
Out there in Radio Land, we invite you to reminisce for a while this afternoon as WNMP presents Those Were the Days, brought to you with fond memories by Northwest Federal Savings at 4901 West Irving Park Road and by the Hastings YMCA Summer Resident Camp at Lake Villa, Illinois. And now from the Little Theater way off Times Square, here's your host, Chuck Shaden.
Thank you, Pete Ermiter, and welcome to our new series of programs designed to bridge the sound gap between yesterday and today. Today is May 2nd, 1970, and yesterday was all the great yesterdays of the past. For example, the yesterday when radio was king. And so today, in a salute to National Radio Month,
We'll hear a 1934 music and comedy program featuring two pioneer broadcasters, Billy Jones and Ernie Hare. We'll listen to an episode of Ma Perkins from the early 1940s. We'll hear Les Tremaine and Claudia Morgan as Nick and Nora Charles in a complete Thin Man story. We'll present an all-star Pepsodent show from 1947 starring Eddie Cantor, Red Skelton, Fibber McGee and Molly, Amos and Andy, Vera Vague, Jerry Colonna, and Walter Winchell. And we'll have a few surprises, too. But first, as they used to say, and still do as a matter of fact, here's a word from our sponsor, Northwest Federal Savings.
Now, since your retirement from the show in 2009, you've been keeping active and still behind the mic, only this time in the form of a monthly podcast. Tell us about that and where it can be heard.
Well, that's yeah, I guess I can't stay away from the microphone, even if it's a podcast microphone. I never thought I would be doing that stuff either, but I was 75 when I retired from the broadcast, and that's still young these days. And I set my mind to putting together the website. I figured that would be a nice thing to do, and I figured that would only be to contain the interviews that I did, but it expanded so much over the years that we did the website. And then my webmaster was a fellow who said, you know, you ought to be doing a podcast. And I had to really have him explain what a podcast was to me. And in simple terms, as you well know, a podcast is a radio show on the Internet, okay? And people can get it simply by clicking on some space. And so I came up with a podcast with a very, very original name called Chuck Shaden's Memory Lane. Now, you know how original Memory Lane is, but that seemed to me what I wanted to do. But I did not want to do old-time radio shows on the podcast. I only wanted to do, well, I always kind of loved being a disc jockey, though I never really spent an awful lot of time as a disc jockey over the years. So I thought, well, I'm going to play records, talk about the music, talk about the writers, talk about nostalgia. And that's what we did. So now we're beginning maybe the fourth year of our series of podcasts called Chuck Shaden's Memory Lane. And it's all over the place, and you can connect with it, again, at speakingofradio.com, where we have an archive of all of the hour-long podcasts that we've done since the very beginning. And an interesting thing about the podcast thing that a radio guy likes is that, well, we say we're going to do an hour, but if we did 58 minutes or if we did 63 minutes, who cares? It is with the podcast the same kind of joy that I experienced with producing the radio program for all the years. I love the planning and the putting together of the material going through. I mean, we did over the years dozens and dozens, maybe hundreds of theme programs, using a theme and underscoring the theme by playing the appropriate radio broadcast. And this is what I do on the podcast. I take a theme. A recent one was called, I called it A Group of Groups. And I played musical recordings and talked about all kinds of singing groups from the 40s and the 50s.
Yes.
I stick real close to the middle of the 20th century with all of this stuff. And that's what we did with our Those Were the Days program for so many years. And it's just a joy to do that. And then, of course, the joy is in being on the air, so to speak, on the air with the Those Were the Days shows, on the air with the Memory Lane podcast. And, of course, when a podcast is up there 24/7 and beyond, if you want.
Right.
So you can get, although the podcast is officially on the air on the first day of every month, although there are people who know that we kind of post it on the last day of the month or the next to the last day of the month, and they're waiting wait for it to get onto it and hear it real early. But that's okay. But there it is. And
you've also developed a presence on social media where you can find the Chuck Shaden's Memory Lane podcast on the Chuck Shaden's Memory Lane Facebook group, which is a great place where anyone can join in posting memories of the golden age of radio and show business and be able to interact with you as well.
Yes, I've enjoyed that immensely. And, you know, I used to say, Facebook, all Facebook is some guy, every time he goes to a restaurant, he takes a picture of his meal and then he posts it on Facebook. I didn't, but I found if you manage it properly, that's okay if somebody has a meal sometime. I have been guilty of posting myself eating a hot fudge sundae on one of my, I've got a couple of Facebook pages, but the one that really is my nostalgic way to connect with so many people is Chuck Shaden's Memory Lane. And many people contribute their things. Other people comment about that, or someone says, one of my nostalgic things that I remember was going to the movies with my parents, or so forth and so on. So it's pure nostalgia, and we always say there's no griping, no politics, no profanity. It's just nostalgia, and that's what we love.
Getting back to your book, Chuck Shaden's Radio Days, I love how you go through the decades year by year and listing the many accomplishments and highlights that took place in your career each year.
Thank you. I started doing that because I was looking through the past of all the material that I had saved from my programs for all this time, and I thought, holy smoke, did I do all of this stuff? It is a chronological look at the various highlights of our programming, and then I blush a little bit as I inserted the comments from people in the newspaper business who wrote about our program and had kind things to say about my broadcast over the years, and I've included many of those quotes from time to time. And, of course, I did a lot of guest shots on other radio programs and on television programs. I did things on cable TV and all in the name of getting the word out and trying to find as many people as we could find who would be interested in the golden age of radio, knowing about the performers, the programs, and the surrounding time periods. I never wanted to introduce an old-time radio show without giving the date of the broadcast and possibly saying a couple of things about what was going on at that time. And radio was really very intimate. Radio is much more intimate than television. You can see Arthur Godfrey sitting on a television screen in your living room, but you know there's a camera between you and Arthur Godfrey. But with radio, you're not aware of a microphone so much between you and the person behind the mic. He's right there in your ear, and you make up the picture yourself as you listen to the dramas and the comedies unfold. And even when you're listening to an individual on the radio, you figure out what he looks like. If you've never seen him, you get to know. It's like being on the telephone, talking to someone in another company for years, and you have an idea of what they look like, and then one day there's a meeting someplace, and he pops up, and you pop up, and both of you look at each other and say, you know, we don't look at all like you sounded.
Very true. And we should also mention a newsletter that you started back in 1974 that has since become a magazine still published today called Nostalgia Digest.
That's correct. That's correct. That's still going strong. And for Nostalgia Digest, if you're interested in the publication of Nostalgia Digest, go to nostalgiadigest.com, because that's a publication of the radio show, and I'm not involved in that, although I was for a great many years.
Right.
But nostalgiadigest.com is where you can find out all about it. And if you go to that website, Steve Darnall, who is the present host of Those Were the Days, has all kinds of information about what's in the current issue of the Digest.
One venture that you brought to Chicagoland was a terrific brick-and-mortar store, chock full of memorabilia from the golden age of entertainment called Metro-Golden-Memories. Every time I would visit, I was literally a kid in a candy store and went home with bags full of goodies and an empty wallet.
Well, I can understand that. Greg, we had a wonderful time with the Metro-Golden-Memory shop. It had a life of about 27 years, and it started because when we were first doing these radio programs on the air, I lamented the fact that there was no place where you could go to buy radio shows. Sometimes you could find them in a mail order catalog someplace or here and there. And we were on the air with programs, and people kept asking me, where can I get copies of these shows? And I said, well, stick a microphone in front of your speaker and click the button. You know, I give you a beat of silence before each program begins. You can copy it. But they wanted to buy tapes. They wanted to buy reel-to-reel tapes or cassette tapes. So we started finding those things, and then we said, there's not many books out about radio or about show business. And so a friend of mine who became my partner in the venture, he and I decided, let's start a little store and see if we can do it. And so we put together Metro Golden Memories, and it was a nice store. People knew what we were talking about. People would come in and would chat with us about their hobbies and their interests. And pretty soon we had a store that was maybe four times as large as the original store that we opened. And it was a wonderful run, and we had a great time with Metro Golden Memories. And it was like the Maltese Falcon. It was the store that the...
Yes, the stuff that dreams were made of.
I just had a wonderful life, like Jimmy Stewart did in his picture. I was fortunate to be able to do this, and I was very pleased to be able to have a show that still stays on. You know, we love a legacy. Everyone says, will people remember me? Well, I don't know if they'll remember me, but they may remember the first time they heard some old-time radio shows.
Well, Chuck, the hour has gone by all too quickly, but it has been an absolute pleasure and honor to speak with you today. I highly recommend your new book, Chuck Shaden's Radio Days, Adding Decades to the Golden Age of Radio, to all of our Nostalgia Radio Time listeners. Since this is not available in stores, tell us once more where copies, including autographed editions, can be found.
Well, everything can be purchased when you go to my website, speakingofradio.com. And you can order it by mail, online, at that, using the material you find there. And if you would like an autographed copy, I'd be more than happy to sign it for you. But when you order it, mention that you'd like an autographed copy, and then they'll let me know about it, and I'll sign the copy, and then it'll be sent to you. It's an honor to have someone ask me for an autograph. I think that's really nice. I never, again, back as a kid listening to the radio, who would ever want my autograph? I don't think so. But I appreciate it. Very nice.
Great. Thank you so much, Chuck.
Thank you, Greg. And I might tell your listeners now, don't touch that podcast dial.
And remind our listeners how you used to close each show for those 39 years.
I used the line that Kate Smith used when she closed all of her radio broadcasts. Thanks for listening.
And thanks so much for your time.
You're very welcome, Greg.
Well, this interview was certainly a dream come true for me, because I had been listening to Chuck Shaden for at least 35 years. Visited his store for the first time in 1985 down in Chicago, and met the man himself. He demonstrated a Philco 1201 for me at the time, one of the Bing Crosby radio record combos that he advertised on his Philco Radio Time shows. And it was a delight to meet him then, and a delight to speak with him now and share that conversation with all of you. Hope you enjoyed it.
Go, Joe, go!
Well, that's it for this week. The old clock up on the studio wall tells me it's time to close up shop for another week of Nostalgia Radio Time. I'm Greg Van Beek. Thank you for listening, and hope you'll join me again next week for more music and memories of the greatest generation. Feel free to email me with your questions about the program, any comments you'd like to make, any requests you'd like to make, old-time radio shows you'd like to hear, songs you'd like to have played. Send them to NostalgiaRadioTime@yahoo.com. And while you're online, be sure to check us out on our social media outlets on Facebook and Twitter as well. Love to have you be a part of our social media outlets. And if you happen to have an antique radio you'd like restored, or an interest in antique radios, looking to acquire an antique radio, get in touch with our friends at the Wisconsin Antique Radio Club. They have a terrific website with lots of great information. Just go to warci.org. So until we meet again next week, I'm Greg Van Beek saying, so long for now.